Welcome to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr on Iowa Catholic Radio. Every Wednesday, diving deep in the truth of the Catholic Church and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from the Mercy Live Up Studio.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Bud Marr.
And we are coming to you from all sorts of places. I am here in Mercy Live Up Studio in beautiful Des Moines, Iowa, on a nice crisp day, the day before Thanksgiving. Bud is in transit with his family towards Thanksgiving holiday bliss. Bud, where are you currently on this wide globe of ours?
I am somewhere outside of Indianapolis, and those yelps and screams you hear in the background are my children, so... This show is brought to you by John Paul II's Theology of the Body.
Nice.
And basal thermometers.
And the technology of radio. This is
somewhere near Indianapolis, which in the Latin means the city of Indiana. So very original.
That's right. That's very good that they chalked up on their ancient languages. So 11:50 a.m., 88.5 FM, 94.5 FM, streaming live, iowacatholicradio.com. And if you have the Iowa Catholic Radio app, you can listen to us nearly anywhere. We are brought to you, as always, by Cartridge World. For instance, if you're Bud and you're driving through the wilds of Indiana, you can rely on your robot phone, which I more and more distrust every day, or you could have used ink that you bought from Cartridge World to print out an actual map. When's the last time you printed out a map, Bud?
I don't know, but I'm pretty sure with how this is going today that in the future, radio programs will just be broadcast without hosts. No, we'll just think, we'll think our thoughts and they'll go directly to the airwaves.
That would be very bad for business. I would not be able to be on a radio show.
But when you do mention the podcast, I have a friend who listens to our show while he mows the lawn. So I wonder if we could convince like a lemonade company to sponsor The Uncommon Good.
A lemonade company?
When you're mowing the lawn, you want a cold glass of lemonade.
Oh, okay. I see the connection now. So Cartridge World for your lemonade or future technology advertising needs in Windsor Heights. As always, also brought to you by Mercy College of Health Sciences. We're wrapping everything up. The semester's getting over. The thing with Thanksgiving is that is a sign that the finish line is coming up soon. So that doesn't mean that all things are all endings, because, of course, every end of a semester is a beginning of a new one. And we're still enrolling people if you want to start in spring. One of the nice things about Mercy College is you can enroll fall, spring, or summer. And so I know that people have turkey on their mind, but when you're sitting there in your turkey coma, if you're thinking about maybe doing something different with your life, we are still taking students for the spring semester.
What with students enrolling for the spring, what's an exciting course on the slate for the spring?
Well, I mean, I teach servant leadership, and are you doing bioethics in spring?
Yeah, still doing bioethics.
So both of those are pretty, I would say, heart-pounding excitement 15 weeks straight. I'm only doing servant leadership, so I'm not doing a third class, but servant leadership is always fun, and like I keep telling people, I have about one more semester where I can refer to teaching class with you and people not think that I have an imaginary friend. So I need to milk that for all it's worth in the spring, the last group of kids that I can talk about when I taught with Bud and they not think that I'm going crazy.
Do you scapegoat me for a lot of things?
Yeah, well, I was talking about this, about like if I just need to like pull out a full Freudian, like, get a puppet and then everything bad in the class, you know, blame on the puppet. You know, that's why your grading was late, as Bud didn't get to him, and everyone's like really uncomfortable as I scald a puppet. I figure this might be good, teaching pedagogy. I haven't seen it in the literature. I was wondering if you heard anything about it.
Oh, man, if I was in your shoes, I would blame you for so many things. Like, oh, that exam was pretty terrible, you know, who wrote it? And I'm like, have like a ready-made picture of you where you're like shouting.
I'm just so. And this is a good example of when we teach an entire part of the course on scapegoating. It can just be sort of like a live, lived-in example. Well, so as everybody is well aware, Bud is on the road. Many of you might be on the road. Many of you might have the day off. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving, and so that means it's holiday time. I know it's one thing to start talking about Christmas when people are still wearing Halloween costumes, but truly, you get Thanksgiving under your belt, and that's in more ways than one, and then Advent starts and Christmas is coming up. So what we were going to do today is have on one of our Uncommon Good All-Stars, Steve Wickmer, who's the Catholic movie guy, because, of course, a lot of movies start to come out precisely at this time. We thought maybe we could talk about the different movies, holiday traditions, what we're thankful for, and whatever shenanigans might come up. So we'll be having him on here in a bit, Bud.
Is it too early to broach the conversation of Christmas films?
Christmas films? No, I'm sure that I'm sure Steve has a ready-made salvo to bring up about Christmas films. So, no,
I know he does. I've heard the Catholic Movie Guy episode about it, but he had some good thoughts. It's kind of it's a fascinating discussion to get into, like what makes the quintessential Christmas movie.
Well, I think we'll definitely get into that, but we'll also get into movies that are coming out now, ones that are out, and the ones that are coming out soon. So we'll be doing that in a minute with the Uncommon Good. It's Bo in the studio, Bud on the road. We'll be back with Steve Wickmer, the Catholic movie guy. Stick around. We'll be back in a minute.
Hey, single mother, let's go to dinner. Single Parent Provision would like to treat you to a special evening in your honor. The 6th Annual Single Moms Christmas Dinner, including a catered meal, program, gifts, and prizes, all in the great company of single moms. Child care will be provided, complete with activities, games, and a meal for your kids as well. So join us December 9th at 5 p.m. in Vets Auditorium, located at 833 5th Avenue in Des Moines. The event is free, but registration is required by December 1st. Go to singleparentprovision.org for more details and register online today.
The path towards priesthood looks different for each person. I'm Father Ross Parker, Vocations Director for the Diocese of Des Moines, and my journey started in elementary school and included college and coaching before I ever entered seminary. You may be in high school or college or working at a great job. If you would like to talk about what that path to priesthood might look like for you, give me a call at 515-237-5050 or online at vocationsonline.com.
Support for the Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Straight, flush, full house? Ah, you got them all. Join the Ball Team for their charity poker tournament to benefit Holding Tiny Hands. Holding Tiny Hands is a nonprofit that supports the parents of preemies and ill infants. The tournament will be on Friday, December 15th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Ball Team office. Located at 10550 New York Avenue in Urbandale. A seat costs $100 and the top three finishers will win gift card prizes. RSVP to msmith at buildwithball.com by November 25th. So try out your poker face and support Holding Tiny Hands.
We're back with the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr. I'm here in the studio. Bud is on the road somewhere around where Peyton Manning first got his start in the NFL. Have you seen Peyton Manning at all, Bud?
No Peyton Manning sightings, but I'm really glad you guys worked out the capability to record this way today, because it's going to make my trip seem faster. So I'm appreciative.
That's what we're here for, Bud. We're here for you.
This hour is going to fly by.
Also on the phone, we have Steve Wickmer coming to us from St. Louis. Steve Wickmer, the Catholic movie guy, among other things. You can listen to his podcast. I happen to be frequent on it. And then I'm also made fun of pretty much in all the other ones. Steve, how are you doing today?
I am doing very well. Thank you for having me on. And I just wanted to compliment Bud on his theology of the body joke. That was a 10 out of 10. That was great.
So we're already... The movie of Bud's life. This is a very good scene. Yeah, Steve, I myself was on a trip this last week in Wichita, so I caught up on a lot of the Catholic Movie Guy podcasts that I happened to miss. So I got to listen to your Godfather extravaganzas. And just for the people to know... Steve, I think, has his brother, the Tin Man, on so that you realize Steve is a good person because he doesn't hold all of the opinions the Tin Man does. But beyond that, I just wanted people to know I do not claim to have a PhD, even though the Tin Man accuses me of such.
It's just that you're so smart, Bo, that everyone assumes it. So just go with it.
All right. That sounds false. But okay. So, Steve, there's a lot to talk about. Of course, when we get ready to go do Turkey Day, that really signals, at least in the movies, that this starts to be holiday season. We're going to get a lot of holiday-type movies coming up. We're getting the big releases. It seems like the new Warp and Weft of the World is every December, something about Star Wars is coming out. So we have movies that are coming up, some great movies that are in the theaters now, and some of the really good ones that are coming to Redbox and such like that. So did you have anything you wanted to start with today, Steve?
Well, you know, I am the Catholic movie guy, and I take the bullets so the audience doesn't have to. I've seen many movies, you know, in the past few months, but I don't know that I've seen many great movies. So do you want to start with the good, the bad, the ugly, what?
Well, I was going to actually ask you a question, because I think, just for once in my life, I might have the jump on the Catholic movie guy. Have you got to see Coco yet, the new Pixar movie?
I have not, no.
Okay, I watched that last night. It is fantastic. It's worth slumming through all of the terrible other kids show previews that are out. So I'm going to at least just hold it out there that there are good movies coming out. But let's start with the ugly, since that's what you're saying predominates.
Okay, so the ugly. And when I, you know, I'm kind of perverse, I guess, in this way. I would rather see a truly terrible movie than a mediocre movie. And probably the platonic form of mediocre movie is the new Justice League. it is sound and fury signifying absolutely nothing. Just a debacle. And it wasn't even terrible. I can't describe it. It's just it does everything wrong when you want to engage your audience. I've kind of honed this through years of rigorous training in the Far East of movie watching, this sort of saber movie metric system. You know, and the first question is, did I fall asleep during the movie? I didn't fall asleep during the movie, so it wasn't that bad. But the second question is, did I care? And I did not. I don't know if you've seen this, but I couldn't care less about what the spectacle on the screen. So to me, that is the ultimate movie sin.
Yeah, I think that I can't be brought to care to go watch it. So I can't imagine what it's like to be sitting there and it seemed like a movie is saying absolutely nothing to you. Bud, you're driving currently through the hinterlands of Indianapolis. Would you rather be doing that or watching Justice League?
I think with Steve's recommendation, I'm going to pass on Justice League, so I appreciate hearing me keep me on the straight and narrow. I don't know, is it bad enough to put a dent in the heavy comic book production?
I don't know. I don't
blow down the comic book production.
I don't think so, because it still makes enough money to justify it. But, you know, it's just it combines all the worst things that a comic movie can do. It's like it has this guy have superpowers. They introduce two new characters, Cyborg and Aquaman, and you don't get any sense, especially with Cyborg, what is this being? He's a half robot, half human, but does he have a limit on powers? At some point, he seems omnipotent. So you can't get a handle on, you know, the stakes involved, because you don't know how powerful these characters are. It also has some of the worst 2017 CGI on the villain, who's totally, totally lame anyway. And just so many mono dialogues about moral issues that no one has a real problem with. And the characters don't talk in a way that you would if you were in that situation. It's just a debacle, just a complete debacle.
Well, a while back, I sat through that one where Batman fights Superman, and that felt interminable. I mean, I that was like sort of fingernails on the chalkboard in my soul. How would you rate compare the two, or did you see that first one?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's bad in a different way. You know, I can't really explain it, because I don't want to spoil too much. I guess, you know, people are going to see this. People are seeing this. But it's more mediocre, you know, it's more of a vanilla type of bad than that movie.
Yeah.
You know, that movie at least was something, but this one, it's just, you know, it's okay. It's Diet Coke. It's fine. Whatever.
Is it caffeine-free Diet Coke? Yeah. So, like, you don't even wake up after you drink it?
That you have bested me. That is the perfect description. It's not even Diet Coke. It's caffeine-free Diet Coke.
Well, not to cause, you know, instant strife, more things for families to fight about over the Thanksgiving table. But DC versus Marvel movies, I can understand people worrying about the sort of sheer inundation of all things comic book, and particularly Marvel Studios really playing a hand in that. But I was wondering if you wanted to go next to comparing the other big Marvel movie title that came out, Thor Ragnarok. You're going to compare those two? What did you think about that one?
Yeah, I really loved the Thor movie, and you know, it's pretty low stakes. It's nothing that you know, I would go back and try to find great insight into the human condition or anything like that. But it's the exact opposite of what Justice League could have been under competent writing and directing. It's fun. It's a joy to watch. It's a spectacle.
It sounds like Bud is having Ragnarok in his van right now.
It's true.
That's every family car trip. Still better than Justice League.
Does the Thor film have kind of like a unique aesthetic going on? Like when I see the previews, it looks really colorful or something.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what you mean by unique. You know, I would say it's kind of a pastiche of of what Marvel's done well recently. It's got a little bit of Doctor Strange in there. It's got a little bit of the Avengers in there. It's got a little bit of the Guardians in there. And even though you're kind of, you know, I wouldn't say I saw anything like I've never seen before, but the way it was done was incredibly competent. It was beautiful. It was original enough. It was a new version of the old song that kept you interested. And you know, that's what Justice League should have been. It doesn't, you know, a movie that takes itself seriously enough to make you care while you're watching it, but also has enough fun with itself, realizing that, you know, these are all people in tight pants hitting each other in a very stylized way.
Yeah, and not to name other particular reviewers to disagree with, but it's one that people listening to the show are more likely to have read, if that makes sense. Some of these reviewers were saying, well, in the, you know, Ragnarok, like, it presents a world where nothing really matters, and, like, you know, in the end, like, what's the difference between what happens or what doesn't, again, not, like, spoiling things. I really thought that was pretty tone deaf. I thought the movie, as funny and lighthearted as you said it was about itself, really did try to like bring up some really interesting ideas about what's truly important, and maybe why is it that we get obsessed with placeholders for what's really important. And again, I'm trying to be vague to not spoil it for people. So if the idea, or if you're getting a vibe from certain reviews that Thor, you know, the new movie doesn't have high enough stakes, as it were. I kind of thought that really missed the boat. I thought it did a pretty good job of weighing those two together.
Yeah, I know exactly which review you're talking about, and I couldn't agree more. I do respect the reviewer, of course. But I think, you know, with me, especially with a comic book movie, I try to go in and I try to give it the benefit of the doubt and pick up on those good themes, and instead of, you know, looking for any excuse to rip it, because obviously it's going to be somewhat slight being a comic book movie. But I couldn't disagree more. I thought the movie presented, it introduced new characters in a way that you got a sense of who they were, why their motivation, their powers. It reintroduced old characters, reacquainted you with them, fleshed them out, and it did give you a sense of exactly what Ragnarok was and the true meaning of, you know, life on Asgard. I'll just leave it at that. So yeah, I can completely agree with you. I thought it was great for what it was. Absolutely.
And then anything that involves Vikings, if it doesn't include the massively huge she-wolf, it has failed. This one fulfills all of your massively huge she-wolf needs. It is
oh, nice.
Yeah, it is a very awesome character.
If you only see one she-wolf based movie this fall, see this movie. Yeah. I agree.
All right.
Guys, I haven't told you about my She-Wolf project that I've been developing in my free time.
It's going to be fantastic. This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr. We're speaking with Steve Wickmer, the Catholic movie guy, bringing you up to date on movies that are out right now, ones that are coming up. All right, Steve, where are we going to go to next?
Well, while we're staying with the good on Thor, let's go to the, I guess we'll go to the great. How about that? Let's talk about Blade Runner, because I think that's the best movie of this quarter of the year, certainly.
I agree. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so I know we're kind of simpatico on this, but, you know, the director, Denis Villeneuve, he is fantastic. His last offering was Arrival, a well-reputed pro-life movie, and here he goes again with another, I think, extremely humane, life-affirming movie that, you know, deals with all the big issues, you know, technology writ large and its effects on dehumanizing humanity. What is the essence of humanity? But it does it in a way that's not just ponderous moralizing. Even though it's an incredibly long movie, I never felt that it got bogged down. And a great part of that, the reason why, is it's a visually stunning movie. I mean, the world building, it builds off of what Ridley Scott did in the original Blade Runner. But, you know, it feels like a world that you could see actually existing. It was at the same time beautiful and horrifying. And the acting was top-notch. It was just a fantastic movie.
I think it's important to, you know, in 2017, when people can do nearly anything they want to CGI-wise, half the battle is restraint, and then the other half is, you know, having an integrated way that you're presenting the spectacle. You know, you don't just, like, one-off, like, look at this crazy thing. You really do go, okay, this permeates the movie, it makes sense, et cetera, et cetera. And I think Thor does that. Justice League, it sounds like, whiffs on it big time. Blade Runner really just hits the ball out of the park. It's like you said, you get an hour and a half in this movie, and they're showing the future that's this bleak apocalypse, but it's you believe every moment. So when they introduce some sort of like new technology that, of course, we don't have because it's the future, you don't go like, oh, what's that? You go like, oh, yeah, of course, that's what they would do. You know, and when movies can make you enter into the world like that, I think that speaks volumes, not only of their restraint, their ability to integrate all the parts of the movie watching experience.
Yeah, you know, you saying that kind of, it makes me think, like, a lot of times when you're in a future movie, you see a gadget or some sort of implement, and you're like, wow, that's really cool. But when you think about it, it's just a big Rube Goldberg device, you
right.
know, like it's like, I don't know, the Jetsons, where, you know, the machine that grooms you in the morning and shaves you, and actually, you know, no one would ever go through that, and it horribly malfunctions and sprays you with shaving cream and all that. This movie, every advance seems believable, and I mean, just, you know, we're in 2017, but one of the main parts of this movie is Ryan Gosling's character has a hologram assistant, and I could see that technology, and it delineates little details like how far in the room she can go with this certain, you know, projector at the top, and things like that, and it's all incredibly believable. I really admire the creative imagination being tempered by, you know, how would this be effectuated practically?
Bud, what technology from 2049 would you like to be using right now in your trip through Indiana?
Well, I'm not sure, but what you guys are talking about, like, I think that's really important with science fiction films, like how you present the futuristic elements. And, you know, I've seen directors, it seems like the harder they try, the quicker the movie becomes dated. But, Bo, you know, like in our bioethics course, we used to show that film Gattaca. And in that film, they did almost like this retro, what would you say, like a 1950s era type feel?
Yeah.
So it had the technology, but instead of trying to guess like what people were wearing in the future, it gave it kind of like this crime noir thing going on, you know what I'm saying? And it's almost allowed the movie to age better than to try to go like the Jetsons sort of guess, you know, how everything's going to go down in the future.
Yeah, I think that any movie that goes like we're gonna do the cutting edge of whatever technology is right now, within 5 years will like everybody goes like, oh, everyone does that, right?
Yeah.
Only a very few movies stand out like that in their weirdness. I mean, I think like The Matrix, the first one, you go, oh wow, that really was just a sort of stunning way to imagine using all that technology. The next two came out and you're like, boring, slow bullets, whatever, you know. So the people who want to like wed themselves too much to the innovation are quickly going to look like fools. But man, there's something about the great science fiction movies, Gattaca, Star Wars, of course, but Blade Runner, the first one, and then this new one. I'm really guessing that a few decades from now, people will look at this Blade Runner and go that it's still worthy of the conversation.
Well, but one thing that you pointed out to me about the Star Wars film is like episode 1 through 3, George Lucas tried to go to like this kind of like shiny, glittery feel. And it missed this, like Rogue One got back to sort of like, future might be really, like it might have a feel of like things breaking down because, you know, of the depletion of resources or something like that. So it kind of recovered the aesthetic of the original one.
Yeah, and I think that, Steve, wouldn't you say this? That's exactly the sort of, what Blade Runner franchise gets at, is that the future can be advanced, but somehow still way rougher and worse.
Exactly, and, you know, you brought up the prequels. I have prequel PTSD, but that's exactly right. There's some really cool, if you can't ignore the fact they're obviously fake, worlds and ideas in the prequels, but you never get to the point where it's like, okay, this makes sense. This is how people on this planet or in this system would actually live. It fails spectacularly in a way that Blade Runner doesn't.
One thing to say so far, some of the movies we mentioned is, of course, they're rated all over the place and for different people. You know, Coco, of course, is for the family, and I'd say that it'd be perfect to watch with the family. Great. I wish they would have actually released it before the Day of the Dead, but, you know, whatever. They released it in November. Justice League, you know, I don't know, is it safe to even let your pets watch it, Steve, or is it, like, so boring that you shouldn't ask any human to watch it? What's your call on that one? Okay,
so
I think that's...
No caffeine. You know.
I think that's...
It won't probably do long-term damage to you, you know? But, I mean, you might, like, get whiplash from your head, you know, falling back when you fall asleep, something like that. But it should be okay.
Thor.
Morally speaking, it's on par with the Wonder Woman. I mean, you know, it's kind of it's appropriately PG-13, I think.
And wouldn't you say, like, Thor Ragnarok's that way too? I mean, I'm not
Thor
remembering.
Thor has just a little more innuendo, but it's in the same ballpark. Yeah,
that's true. Blade Runner 2049 is definitively for adults, and we don't want to deny that. First of all, just for the sheer how scary and depressing the movie can be, and then B, the really sort of the topics that it's talking about, language, even though it's violent, though, I still don't think it's like a gore violence fest. The big thing that it probably gets spoken of in the public is that there is nudity in it, very much so and unavoidably. The strange thing about it is I would argue that it might be some of the least gratuitous nudity I've seen in a modern film in a long time. It still doesn't mean it's for kids or those who are easily led astray by those sort of things. But just to give the movie credit, any time that nudity shows up, it's almost always for the effect of terror or sort of sadness and not, you know. So I'm thinking of, like, there's films that demonstrate the sort of brutality of people, like, you know, they show the dead naked bodies at Auschwitz or something like this. And so, you know, whether you want to debate whether it should be in films at all or not, I'm only throwing out that this movie's not very gratuitous, either in its violence or its nudity, but it is definitively rated R.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. You know, I'm not going to, I don't remember every specific instance if it was strictly speaking necessary, but certainly every time there is nudity, it is not lascivious, it's not titillating, it's served to underscore the point that this is dehumanizing, not something to be lauded. So yes, I agree, it's not gratuitous.
And I think that's one thing too that's caught me by surprise is there's a way in which people like just have a checklist about movies. If it does this, that, or the other, it must be this kind of movie. Oh, blank, 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 blank. And Blade Runner got this sort of treatment all over the place where it was like, oh, you see how people, for instance, treat women in this movie. It's anti-female. And I think you and I talked about this in your podcast. I think the entire point is that's done to show you how terrible this world is. And then it also seems to forget that many of the leaders of the good guys in this movie actually are female. But not to belabor that point, just to bring up this other one. When you're out there looking at movie reviews or you're hearing people talk about movies, I guess maybe because there's so many coming at us and there's so many vehicles in which you can watch movies that people will do this. They'll make the sort of easy checklist. And frankly, Steve, that's why we need heroes like you to actually give us good reviews of movies and not just the checklist movie descriptions.
That's right, Bo. I am the hero you need, not the hero you deserve.
Well, Steve, we're getting ready to go to the break. Can you stick around and join us after our break?
I suppose.
And then, Bud, are you still on a highway, or are you like in a canyon or the woods of Indiana?
I'm crashing through the brush right now and about to cross the pond, but I think I can keep the family alive.
So all right,
I'll do my best.
Well, we'll be back in a minute or so then with the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher, speaking with Steve Wickber, the Catholic movie guy. Stick around.
Straight, flush, full house, you got them all. Join the ball team for their charity poker tournament to benefit Holding Tiny Hands. Holding Tiny Hands is a nonprofit that supports the parents of preemies and ill infants. The tournament will be on Friday, December 15th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the ball team office. Located at 10550 New York Avenue in Urbandale. A seat costs $100 and the top three finishers will win gift card prizes. RSVP to msmith@buildwithball.com by November 25th. So try out your poker face and support Holding Tiny Hands.
Hey friends, John Linetti here, and I want to thank Plaza Dental Group for underwriting my show. Plaza Dental Group makes their patients feel comfortable and right at home, like one of the family. Catholic owned, they offer cosmetic dentistry and implants, 6-month smiles, and Invisalign, an alternative to traditional braces, along with mercury-free dentistry. Plaza Dental Group, comfortable dentistry. 515-344-3523. Online at dmsmiles.com.
Support for the Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Thank you to Tamiya & Sons for your support of Dowling Catholic Football. Tamiya & Sons is an Italian family restaurant with old country authentic Italian food. Enjoy the local atmosphere where you may even spot a priest, politician, or even Willie Farrell. Take advantage of Tamiya & Sons bocce ball court with the kids while enjoying Tamiya's homemade bread, pasta, and real Italian homemade desserts. Tamiya & Sons is located on Southeast 1st Street, just south of downtown Des Moines and around the corner from Graziano Brothers. 515-282-7976. TamiyaAndSons.net.
Back with the Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner here in the studio, Dr. Bud Maher out on assignment with his family in Indiana, and Steve Wickber coming to us from good old St. Lou. Everybody back with us? Are you safe, Bud?
Yeah, and I can confirm that last commercial. You are very likely to see a priest that's me.
That's right. So. I think
I corroborate that.
That is actually true. Steve, we've been going through talking about movies that are out now. Like you said, starting with Thanksgiving, this really amps up the holiday movie season. So you have people who've tried to put out some heavy hitters that play through Thanksgiving, some stuff coming up soon. Where do you want to go to next talking about our movie extravaganza, Steve?
So I have one other good movie that I've seen recently that I'd like to bring up to the panel, if I may.
Sounds good.
And it's called Wonder, and it's starring Julia Roberts, Owen Wilson, and the young man who's in Room, one of my favorite movie of 2015. But I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But it's a fantastic movie. And have you heard of it?
So I went and watched Wonderstruck, thinking that it was this movie.
No, different movie.
Yeah, different movie. Yeah. No, I haven't got to watch this one.
Okay. So, I mean, I don't know what to say about this movie, except it's like a glorified Lifetime movie, and I mean that as a compliment.
Yeah.
So I know it probably doesn't sound like it, but it's like everything those Hallmark, Lifetime, the good ones, try to do, the warm, fuzzy feeling and the coming together of all humanity and blobbity-blue.
Yeah.
That movie actually does in a very competent, good way. It's about this young man who was born with severe facial deformities, and he's been homeschooled his whole life until, I believe it's fourth grade or fifth grade, can't remember, and his parents decide they're going to finally, let him go out in the world. He's so terrified of the world that he actually wears an astronaut helmet. He wants to be an astronaut someday. To cover his face when he goes out in public. So it's quite the traumatic incident, finally being forced into a public school. And, it's competently acted. It has great direction, all that. But the thing that really struck me about this movie is it's not just about the boy, and his struggles, of course, But it also focuses on, he has a sibling, an older sister. And in a lesser movie, you know, maybe this sister would be just a side character to support him, or would just be completely petulant, you know, attention-getting. You know,
right.
Why do you pay attention to my brother? But in this movie, she really, to me, was kind of the star of the movie in her character and her struggles, because she's an actual good person. How do you deal with that when your brother, who rightly is the center of all attention of your parents, and you're just trying to, you know, become an adult? So just a fantastic movie. I cried a couple times, I'm ashamed to admit, but very, very good movie.
No, that sounds... So Wonderstruck tried to pull off the sort of... I always call it the Steven Spielberg mystique, you know, where you're supposed to have like a twinkle in your mm-hmm. eye and remember the old days sort of deal. In that movie, and again, it's funny that one's called Wonder and one's called Wonderstruck, because so in Wonderstruck, it's about two deaf children in two different eras. One is in 1927 New York, and the other is 1970s New York. And it's a movie that tries to pull off way too much than it can actually pull off. It's also very... Only New Yorkers think people care this much about New York. You know, it's all like, look at us go by this part of New York. Now look at us do it 50 years later. And everything's about museums, and like, evidently everyone in New York loves museums and stuff like this. But I'll give you this. The 20s part, they do like a silent film, and it's really neat. The 70s one, they go all out making it 1970s New York. So like, the whole place looks like a trash fire. And everybody, let me say, wears interesting clothing choices. I'll put it that way. So it sounds like Wonder pulled off what Wonderstruck tried too hard to do. You know, we talked about restraint in CGI. I think sometimes people need a good old dose of restraint in storytelling as well. Because this movie really was like, let's do it all. Let's talk about if you go to a museum in New York, you can save your soul. And you're like... Pump the brakes. Pump the brakes there, guys.
Which museum? It's great because, you know, this movie, spoiler alert, no one gets shot, nothing blows up. It's no one goes into the future or the past. It's just a very good lesson in less is more, and the restraint shown with the director serves to highlight the character development and the themes of the movie. And it's also, you know, you were saying, is this safe for your family? This is, I believe, rated PG, and the reason that it is rated PG is that, you know, it's not trying to do any innuendo. There's like one scene where the marital couple is, you know, talking about, you know, loving each other, but it's totally family friendly. I mean, the themes are mature, so in that sense, you know, you probably don't want to take a 5-year-old to deal with bullying and all the facial deformities and birth defects, but. It's one of those films that's so rare that ever you can watch without any hesitation in front of your kids. So it's great.
Bud, you, in your current state with your family right now on the wilderness of Indiana, would you use the word wonder in any way to speak about it?
Oh, I wonder. Yeah. Steve, could I use the film as like subtle propaganda for homeschooling, or is that an angle... Like with friends.
Yeah, I was afraid to tread. I was treading lightly there.
Oh no!
In the waters. Yes, it is a great advertisement for homeschooling in two senses. One, it produces a kid who's smarter than all of his classmates, as we all know. No offense to you public schoolers out there. and he's well adjusted. He's socialized, even though he's really, you know, not been a terribly social kid. And he comments, you know, about science class. He's like, well, yeah, it's nowhere near as hard as mom's science. So it is a great homeschooling propaganda piece. But it also paints the public schools in a good light, because, you know, there are good souls there. He does get adjusted. He has great teachers, all that. So I think everybody wins, you know, whatever your choice of schooling.
Man, this sounds like the perfect date movie for me and Rachel.
Exactly right. This is a movie that... Yeah. Yeah.
I think you just...
If you're in the trad Catholic circles.
You park somewhere, like you go to a Sonic in Indiana, bud, like, you know, yeah. Gary, leave the kids, you guys walk over to the movie theater. I think it's going to work out. I think this is a beautiful start to Thanksgiving break for you.
Here, Madeline, keep everyone alive for the next hour and a half.
This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr. We're speaking with Steve Wickmer, the Catholic movie guy here in the Mercy Live Up Studios. All right, Steve, so you said that finishes off the good. So are you wanting to go to bad, or you want to talk about movies that are coming up, or what?
Let's do two decent ones very quickly. They don't merit a lot of discussion.
Okay.
The first, if you're looking for like a movie, you don't have to like really wrestle with deep themes. You just want to have an entertaining night that doesn't, you know, offend you or put you to sleep. Murder on the Orient Express, which is based off an Agatha Christie novel of the same name.
Mm-hmm.
If you like murder mysteries, if you like Agatha Christie, I don't see how you can't like it. The acting is fantastic, particularly Josh Gad, who I had no expectation would be great, is fantastic in the movie. And it's you know, it's beautiful, it's very well acted, competently done, but nothing that you're going to have to like think about for 5 seconds afterward.
Right.
And then if you're looking for a guy-type movie, The Foreigner with Jackie Chan, I really enjoyed it. It has Pierce Brosnan playing an actual Irishman for once. Jackie Chan is a man who's lived a hard life and is trying to do right. And just thoroughly entertaining. So those are a couple ones. If you just want to see a movie to enjoy the popcorn and have a good time, I could recommend them. And nothing terribly immoral about either one, particularly Murder on the Orient Express. Nothing immoral at all.
I have the one that I would throw out that I haven't decided yet about how great I think it is, but I think people should watch it because at the very least it's visually entertaining. The movie Loving Vincent, which is one of the first movies animated entirely in paint. So it's all painted like Vincent van Gogh's paintings. And the characters come from his paintings. It's not about his life, like, per se. It's about an event that happens after his death. And there's flashbacks talking about Vincent van Gogh. And then I was talking to my wife, who knows quite a bit about his life. And it sounds like, of course, they've maybe done a little bit, you know, taking liberties to make the story work out. But at the very least, you will go away being amazed that they were able to animate this in sort of Vincent van Gogh type painting, and it not be only about that. It really does work as a movie. So that one might be a little lesser well known, but Loving Vincent would be another one that I think if you just need something, you could go watch that one.
So I heard your discussion before I got on about Bud was starting to prod into the Christmas movie territory. Can we broach the subject?
Oh yeah, that's why we have you on. We brought out the big guns to talk about this.
All right. So I want to say, you know, if you're a real Catholic, you won't watch any Christmas movie until December 24th at the earliest. But if you happen to watch a little earlier, what is your favorite Christmas movie, each of you?
Do we count Star Wars
under
movies now because they're on in December, no matter what?
Oh, no. Oh. It has to be centered around Christmas in some fashion.
Okay, Bud, what is Indiana making you think about in terms of Christmas movies?
Well, I'm a huge fan of Christmas movies, and I have to say every single Christmas season I watch both Home Alone and National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, and if I had to choose just one, like if the house was on fire, I could save only one, it'd probably have to be National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, because it blends nostalgia with like the joys of family life, but also a lot of good slapstick humor. So that's way at the top of the list for me.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go between National Lampoon's and Elf. I know that makes me a terrible person, probably, in Steve's mind, but Elf is not awesome. It's funny enough, but like my kids, you know, they all know who Buddy the Elf is, and they think he's pretty funny. So, sorry, Steve.
I can hear your distinct. I love Elf.
Oh, okay,
I love
you love
it.
Elf. Okay.
No. I do. Good. You didn't step on my toes at all. Excellent. So I love those movies. They're all great choices. My two current favorites every year that I watch without fail. I usually watch Home Alone and National Lampoon's and Elf too, but. For the adult crowd, I love the movie Scrooged with Bill Murray. Yeah. Is anyone a Scrooged fan?
Okay, I forgot about that one. That one's good.
Oh man,
too.
No! Don't. It's some, you know, a little body, a little vulgar take on the Christmas Carol, but I love it. I think Bill Murray's hilarious. It's got a star-studded cast. I highly recommend that one. And then my true favorite Christmas movie, and you can look down on me if you want. And I think the definitive take on the Christmas Carol is the Muppets Christmas Carol.
Oh, no. Yeah, the Muppets Christmas Carol is really good. Oh, I always forget about that. Yeah, that is a good one.
Well,
yeah,
I know this
I mean,
one.
The kids love it. I love it. It's fantastic.
This one divides a lot of people, and I find that they either love it or hate it. But Rachel and I are pretty big fans of A Christmas Story, and it kind of captures a certain era of American life, and it shows, like, the joys and the frustrations of fatherhood. I don't know. There's just some really iconic moments, like the kid getting his tongue stuck to the telephone pole, or like when the mom convinces the little like toddler or the 5-year-old probably to eat his mashed potatoes. I don't know. I think it's got some really funny moments. I guess I can understand why some people find it a little over the top or obnoxious.
I'm just pro us eating more Chinese food during the holiday season.
That works.
Yes, when I was a kid, I thought that was the best thing. Like, I'm like, you don't have to eat Christmas food? What? It was great. You know, that's fantastic.
Is this where one of us...
No, I think it's just become so ubiquitous that people kind of rag on it.
But
it is, you know, it captures a certain style of American life. There's no doubt about that.
So have you convinced the Tin Man to watch National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation yet?
Nope. Can't do it. Won't do it.
On the podcast.
I don't know. He hates broad comedies for some reason. I don't know.
Okay.
So
he's a big fan. He's a big fan of what's the famous one where the guy almost commits suicide and is that A Wonderful Life?
Oh yeah. It's A Wonderful Life. That's a touchy subject for me too because I don't hate it, but you know I did not watch it growing up. And I watched it for the first time as an adult, and it doesn't totally work for me personally.
No, I'm
with you there.
I think that's fair. I think the other thing, of course, that whenever you get in a Christmas movie, someone's inevitably supposed to ask if Die Hard is a Christmas movie. I feel like that's, you know, that like just by fate, it's like Ragnarok, Steve. Like someone has to ask this question of, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Is it a Christmas movie if Christmas shows up into it? Blah, 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 blah. So I know you rehearsed this.
Right.
Do you have any like quick barbs to throw out to the audience about what makes a Christmas movie?
Well, yeah, I'm actually I didn't tell anyone, but I'm studying to become a PhD in movieology, and my thesis is actually or my dissertation. What do you do to get a PhD? Whatever it is,
yeah,
it's on what makes a Christmas movie a Christmas movie. So I feel like I can weigh in confidently. You can't say that it has to be about Jesus, or else you know all of these movies are out the window. So when I say Christmas movie, what I mean is the season of Christmas, right?
Right.
And if you broaden it to that, then, you know, I think, for me, Die Hard probably gets, you know, is Christmas an essential part of that plot? And I think, in a way, this one is. It's about families coming together. The only reason he's coming is for Christmas. He's giving her her Christmas gift. They're spending Christmas as a family. Nakatomi Towers goes down, and it's a Christmas movie to me, man. I don't know. It is.
Yeah.
That's why we have the annual practice in our family of walking barefoot on glass that has been broken by terrorists because of Die Hard.
An ancient tradition.
Well, so with the last part of the show, Steve. So there are movies that people are endlessly ramping up about what we should go see. I think the obvious one that we should talk about in the room is The Last Jedi, the next installment of Star Wars. Do you have any thoughts from the trailers about what you're thinking of this? Are we set up to be disappointed because of the advertising campaign? Is it still mysterious enough? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a sign of the times that the Last Jedi trailer has probably been written more about and reviewed more now than a Charlie Chaplin film. I mean, it's unbelievable. This thing has been dissected to death, and we don't even know anything about it. I'm going in with an open mind. I'm just not as excited as I should be. I'm not nearly as excited as I was for The Force Awakens. I fear that, you know, we're just getting overload on this. It used to be an event, you know, and now it's just another chapter in the Star Wars saga, so... I'm not terribly excited. Of course, I will go see it, and hopefully the movie will be good enough that it changes my mind.
Well, I don't think they help themselves out by, like, sort of showing these trailers and then saying, like, they're planning for 12 more movies or whatever it was. And then maybe even...
Exactly.
Maybe even a show. you know, and just all of this stuff, and you're just like, oh my goodness, people, you gotta, you know, slow the jets down.
I feel like we're set up for a letdown because episode three was the best of the prequels, and then these last two movies have been really fun, really good. So I don't know. It's just I'm pessimistic. I'm a pessimistic sports fan. I'm a pessimistic moviegoer. So.
I think life has purchased that well for you, bud. Let me think. What else is it big? Oh, I don't know if Incredibles 2 coming out over the holidays, or is that actually later that it's coming out?
No, that's way down the road.
Okay, that they're just only now announcing it. Okay, what else is coming out for Christmas that they're bombarding us with?
Well, I'll tell you what. For me, what I'm looking forward to is a movie called 3 Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
Mm-hmm.
Starring Frances McDormand. And it's been, you know, in like limited release for a long time. But when it finally comes to my podunk town of St. Louis, I'm going to, you know, be first one buying a ticket because it's got everything that I like in a small story, competent acting. It's actually scored by the same man who does the Coen Brothers movies, keeping with the Frances McDormand theme. And I'm just really looking forward to a movie that doesn't try to, like, have the fate of the galaxy or the world or the cosmos on its mind. It just examines, you know, here's a murder, and here's how someone reacts to that in a very small way. So hopefully more on the small scale human storytelling, like Wonder. I'm kind of overloaded with the superhero vibe lately.
Bud, you got anything coming up that you're anxious to go see?
No, I, for whatever reason, I'm not as disciplined as you guys are about getting out to film in the theater. So for me, it's a lot of DVD watching. I have been showing Madeline, my oldest daughter, the Indiana Jones film, and so she wants to be an archaeologist now.
Did you tell her that there is a discernibly less amount of whips involved than those movies make it seem like for archaeologists?
I tried to explain this to her, but the idea of, like, dodging rocks and, you know, wading through snake pits just sounds too enticing.
I don't know about you guys, but the archaeology department in your schools when you were an undergrad decidedly not like Indiana Jones at all. So I don't know, did any of you guys have anybody named after a state who hated snakes and could swing on trees with a whip?
No, my mentor,
I just want to say.
Oh, go ahead, Steve.
No, you first.
My mentor at John Brown University was—he actually is an archaeologist—and he's assured me that it's a much more boring vocation than Harrison Ford makes it out to be.
Yeah, I just want to say that I think that the archaeology is displayed in Indiana Jones probably translate to lawyering in movies compared to my job. Do not be fooled, kids. These are movies.
Not a John Grisham novel.
No, yeah, every day I'm tracking down some new bit of evidence. And yeah, no, not exactly.
You know who actually...
I do conference calls a lot, though, so there you go.
The closest of our three, like, sort of philosophy people, how they're portrayed in most movies is relatively accurate because philosophers are bums who get involved in stuff in metal and things they shouldn't. So, like, pretty
that's
much
right.
Anytime they show up in movies, you're like, oh yeah, that's totally believable. That's what a philosopher might do.
The only believable part of most lawyers in movies is that they're usually, like, high-strung, degenerate, alcoholic types, you know? That's accurate, but the actual excitement of the job, not so much.
To bring it all together, I had a friend who he worked in for the Bureau of Land Management, and it was about requisition of Native American properties that, like, oil companies would find when they were digging for oil in Wyoming. And he pointed out, like, so he had studied in both American and Native American law, so that's why they brought him in to talk about, like, who does this belong to, how do you figure these things out and stuff like that. And he said Indiana Jones is basically just, like, one long demonstration about how many lawsuits would occur because Indiana Jones is just going and stealing antiquities from other countries, and that it's basically how not to be an archaeologist. So I thought that was a pretty compelling way to understand those films.
Well, Bo, since we're nearing the end of the show, I want to make sure we got in there that, you know, we're dispensed from Friday fasting on the day after Thanksgiving. So everybody have a blessed Thanksgiving, but also pound those cold turkey sandwiches on Friday.
Oh, don't worry. The turkeys won't
the turkey
know.
Won't get eaten. You're not doing tofurkey this year?
No, absolutely not. I believe that God exists, so I will not be doing tofurkey. Steve, we're reaching the end of our time. Is there any sort of last-minute advice from the Catholic movie guy that you want to throw out to the crowd?
Be a discerning viewer, avoid the Justice League, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
So where can they go listen to more of the podcast if they just can't get enough, if an hour with the Catholic movie guy is not enough?
It's never enough, and I have many, many hours of back episodes for your listening pleasure. CatholicMovieGuy.com. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can go on iTunes, subscribe it, review it, 5 stars only. Facebook, Twitter, Catholic Movie Guy. You'll be the coolest kid at Thanksgiving if you do it.
It's certainly something to talk about on the table with the turkey in the middle. Steve, thanks for joining us. Happy Thanksgiving, man. Tell your whole family hi for us.
I will. Thank you. You too, guys.
Thank you.
So, Bud, where are you? Where are your coordinates now? But like, before we let you go, can people be assured that you are safe where you're driving?
Yeah, actually, the first half of the show was kind of dangerous. I was navigating downtown Indianapolis and doing the show, but we stopped at a rest stop, so we're good to go. Mom and Dad, rest assured. Your grandchildren are in one piece, and I think we're about to have cheese sticks and crackers for lunch. So.
Oh wow!
No, yes. Rachel says it's a what is it, honey? Sandwiches.
Well, good. Your guys are like going lo-fi so that when you hit the turkey table, you can really make up for it. Well, Bud, it's been great talking to you. You guys drive safe, and you have a happy Thanksgiving as well, man.
Yeah, you guys too. Blessings.
So this has been the Uncommon Good. Like we say, we love you guys being a part of our experience here. It's not just us speaking on the radio, but when you guys donate to us, it's a ministry that we share. So if you are thankful for what we do here at the radio, please feel free to send in and support us. We are a nonprofit organization. Join us for the Rosary, 9:30 every day, Bible in a Year at 5 a.m. This is the Uncommon Good. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in your hearts, in your families, in our cities, our state, our nation, the entire world. The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard Wednesdays at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. on Iowa Catholic Radio and on the official Iowa Catholic Radio app.